Well, I was pressed to the Lord from the past couple of days to ask a brother of mine to do some homework. And I didn't get to ask him until last night. And as you know, the Lord decided to release something into his heart. And so if you will allow Bob, those of you who don't know Bob, he was my family doctor for, I don't know how many years. I lost count of the years because we're getting older now.
Longer than we don't get.
And God has actually transformed this man and transformed both of us. He kept me alive in physical ways more than once. And now God has given me an opportunity to give a different kind of life back to him.
Given the fact that I actually need all the help that I can get, I'd like to start with prayer, if I could. It's sort of my prayer for me. Lord, only you really know what is inside of me. Only you can appreciate the discomfort that moments like this present for me. Only you can know the senses of inadequacy that I have within me. You know all too well me, and it's only recently that I'm coming to know you. And so, Lord, I know that you wouldn't put me here in this place if there wasn't something good to come of it, either for me or for the one or several listening. I know that we learn in various parts of the Bible about your all-consuming, all-loving stance towards each and every one of us. We know that you have known us before, during our lives, and we know it now and forevermore, the Alpha and Omega. We know that you know all the hairs on our head. It's amazing to contemplate that in the real world. We say, hope and belief, we know to be true. So, Lord, I just ask you to help me to say something to anyone listening that may be helpful. So, we know our pastor. Don't we know our pastor? He calls me at 7:30. There's miracles of technology, not that it's a great miracle. Caller ID announces the presence of Bergeron on the other line. And I'm doing other things, and I'm thinking, you know, God bless this caller ID. I can just not answer this and just put it down. I'm series of thoughts quickly go through my mind. Did he see me bug out quickly after church? That was the first worship on Sunday. That was my first thought. You know, that was peculiar. I usually schmooze around a little bit and oftentimes have something to say that's seldom momentous, but is oftentimes pleasant. And I had an obligation to attend to. And then I thought, well, he's a man who gets clearly received actively in the Spirit. And this can be good and bad news. If he's gotten something for me, that's great. But if he's gotten something for me to do, that may not be so good. And I know these things happen in 2 or 3 seconds, but I am very sorely tempted to just keep that phone on the hook and not pick up the phone. Having said so, I then finally fell to the conclusion, this is our pastor. He's calling me. I really don't have a choice. I'm going to have to pick up the phone and deal with whatever is there. And so I did. Kim was kind enough to introduce me a little bit to some of you that haven't met me. I have been in a former life a doctor. I don't happen to be practicing now, but I guess once and for all, you know, it's like a secret handshake. Once you're a member of society, you can't get out of it. So I guess I remain a doctor, albeit one not practicing actively. Just up as the backdrop, so I kind of have spent most of my life in interactions with others, interpersonal relating to others. Seldom would people come to see me because they were happy to see me. Typically, they'd come because they were troubled, or they were obligated, or some combination of both. So, Kim is Nothing's more service-oriented than pastoring, I'm sure, and having people about whom one is concerned. And so Kim does as I might do in my own life, medical ministry to some extent, and that's asked the open-ended question. He doesn't say why he's calling, of course. He just says, how you doing, you know? How's your day been? How you going? How's things going? And I have had a rather tedious day, and it turns out that although I didn't recognize it until I started answering the question, it's been fairly loaded, and I'm pretty self-reflective about it. I have had someone come to visit me at home to look at trees, of all things, that exist in this forested lot I live on. And I'm talking about the facts of the matter, and I'm beginning to bemoan the fact that I should have done this before. I had the notion that I had to do it. In fact, I can't even say I was unaware. I've been aware that there was something to do, and I just haven't done it. And now I have to do it because things have become too damp and too overgrown. And now I'm looking at a substantial project that I had no intention of getting into at such a late date. I think I'm trying to sell this house, and yet I'm having to deal with it. And I segue to talking about my basement that's been filled with water for many years, on and off, and then I put it off doing that. And I'm kind of whipping myself. It's a little bit of self-flagellation because the conclusion I'm reaching is that I have just let myself down. I've let, in some big sense, the world down. I haven't acted on this at an earlier stage. And it's pretty self-judgmental, and an extension of self-judgment is condemnation, at least as I'm beginning to become more aware of that. And the good news is there's a pastor on the other line. So he's able to say to me, well, you know, you could kind of flip that around. Maybe you weren't meant to reach that conclusion at those times that you had all the information available to you. Maybe you weren't ripe for the experience. Maybe you needed to have grown in some other ways in order to be prepared for that. And so I was happy for the encouragement, a little doubting about the legitimacy of that comment, but I gave him the benefit of the doubt. He's the pastor. You've got to respect the position, even respect the man, too, of course. And I'm still waiting for the other shoe to drop because I know he's probably not just called to hear about my afternoon. More likely than not. He's got something else over there. And in fact, he then finally gets to the salient point of the call, which is, you know, I've had this press inside of me. Just like the introductory remarks, I've had this press inside of me. Of course, I'm not calling you until 7:30 on the night before you're supposed to come up with something to say. But by the way, I think you should share something with the group. And it's immediate on my part. No, I don't think so. I really don't think so. You just heard what I've been going through. I know I can't focus on this. I'm just not prepared to do it. And he's making me these sort of low-level offers. He's giving me the chance to recant, to repent. And he keeps the conversation going. You're going to get these calls if you haven't had it, so chuckle now, but be prepared later. So they've had it, that's right. So, the fallback position for the pastor is, well, don't make the decision now. You just have to, think about it, the inferences, pray about it, see what comes to you. Maybe the Lord will have something for you. Maybe it'll actually be okay. And I'm thinking, I'm stuck now. There's no way to get out of this because, after all, if I don't get something, what does that really mean? I'm not listening. I'm not hearing. I'm incapable of having anything of a spiritual experience. Humiliated in front of others. Just stuck. It really just isn't. It's not kind. Yeah. So I typically sleep relatively well. I go to bed way too late, but seldom in my quasi-retired state do I get up early. Obviously, wake up at 8:30 or 9, languish in bed for a while before getting out. So, of course, 5:20, here I'm wide awake. Completely screwed now because I know I have to say something because I know I'm not waking up at 5:20 for nothing. And I'm trying hard to go back to sleep, and it's not happening. I'd like to say I had some kind of epiphany, that the burning bush was there and Jesus came down to the cross and gave me instructions. It just didn't happen. But the thing was, it got my attention. It really made me, it actually made me lie there and not so much focus on what I might say, but focus more on what do I really think about this sort of notion of being a Christian? What is it, you know, all about? In my former life, I was busy being busy. I really wasn't. I certainly wasn't focused in any way, shape, or form on those things for the last 4 years that I've been focused on. And I needed to kind of help to have that digested to figure out what it all meant. So I came to the conclusion that, yes, I would have to say something. Hopefully it would be of help. Even if it didn't help anybody else, it was going to help me. Because I was forced to confront some of these issues that even if I had a car accident on the way and never, ever had to present anything, I'd still, you know, I was going to get something out of it. Come hell or high water, I was going to gain from it. So I kind of looked at that process that I was going through when talking to Pastor Bergeron and thinking, you know, what is it that we're really asked, what's asked of us? What's really asked of us is to listen, to receive, to respond out of faith and belief, and then to act. But, you know, the Adamic man is really, he's cursed or blessed with this sort of natural responses, and part of all of us have a kind of reluctance to engage in that. We don't want to do it. It's going to make us feel uncomfortable on some level. And so in many instances in the non-church world, one can get out of it. I mean, that really sometimes limits personal growth, but it's helpful nevertheless. But in this instance, I wasn't going to be able. So what to really say? The thing I know most about is myself. I know much more about myself than what I'm. So I'm learning lots more about things outside myself. So I looked at my own real life example and how the Christian kind of way is available to. If it's available to me, it's available to all of us. You know, if one is in need, it can rescue you. It can bolster you. It can support you. It can teach you. It's all encompassing to the extent that we want to be a part of it. Listen, those things available to us. So without getting into the details, and I spoke about this on the one other time when I was here to be forced again to make some public announcements under low-level protest that I had in my career life, I've been suddenly jettisoned. The details are not necessary for listeners, but I really found myself suddenly after more than two decades practicing medicine, temporarily but for a long time unable to do so. And it had to do with legal matters, and ultimately the good news is that with lots of sustained energy and angst and money and anguish, personal suffering and the brokenness we hear about all the time, I was able to have that part of my life resurrected, i.e. back in the fold if I wished to be. But what really struck me was the quality of ministering that I was able to both be offered and more especially received. And it started with Kim calling me. I'd been out of work for a couple of months, having no knowledge about where this was all going to lead. I had legal battles. I had a son in college who needed tuition paid. I had no income and no promise of income and no availability of working in my field into the indefinite future. And Pastor calls me up out of the blue and he says, you know, he doesn't have my phone number. We've never talked outside the office. I don't think so. And he says, which I found bizarre, although less so now that I understand the process. He says, you know, you've been on my heart for several days. And he knows nothing of my situation except I'm his doctor. He knows I'm not there anymore. But based on circumstances that I'm happy to elaborate maybe off mic, people at my job wouldn't tell anybody what was going on. You know, had I died, had I had a breakdown, was I locked up in jail, who knew? But what people did know, probably 3,000 people, all of a sudden when they called to see me, I wasn't there. So he's got this from, you know, he gets the word that I guess something's going on and he reaches out to ask about it. And that's all any of us have to do. I mean, that's part of the teaching point is, all you have to do is recognize someone in need and stretch out your hand. You don't have to do much else. You don't have to know what Matthew 11 is. Just to compete, because part of my defense against speaking was, you know, I've only been doing this for 4 years. I really don't know the word. And so he says, well, you know, Pete had nothing. And Pete got up and, you know, that was a wonderful message he gave. I said, yeah, but Pete's been doing this for 30 plus years, 40 years maybe. I don't know. He, you know, 25 is a lot more than 4. And you know, actually some scriptural context. And I said that, well, he can always turn to the Bible if he's in trouble. He can always quote something and we can go off with that. And I'm just not capable. I haven't memorized enough to know. I know the messages, but I don't really know the finite points. But in any case, I'm kind of digressing. Actually, the whole thing is a digression. I apologize. But, you know, I'm thinking, what really can I learn from my own life? And what I'm learning as I'm thinking about it is, I was probably as low as many people get. I'm sure there were people in much more desperate straits than I. I had some savings. I had supported family. I had a home I was living comfortably in. I had modest numbers of friends that were privy to what was going on and reached out to help me. But here's somebody that I've known professionally who doesn't, he probably remembers, but probably 7 or 8 years earlier had been in my office. And I had a terrible experience, interpersonal relationship that had ended drastically, and just terrible. And he comes in, it was a short time after, and you got to understand, this doesn't happen much in an office setting, but he just puts his arms around me and just holds me. I don't even know if he said anything, but he had a strong sense that there was something there. So here again, this kind of living example that Kim at least provided for me, and I'm saying now we can provide for anyone else by our mere presence of caring and reaching out and touching someone else. So when I thought about what to really say, it was more about the process of growth through Jesus, through the Lord, through a church, not necessarily this church. I've never heard you say, we have the way. I've been in churches where they have the way. They know they have the way, and they're happy to share that news with you. But the notion here is that we have all of the information available to us if we just can open our ears and listen. Now, we've really been blessed recently. I know our new visitors weren't part of that, but we've had this kind of intense availability of information, of spirit, through the recent feast that we finished. And you have to be pretty much dead to not come out of that change. I'm not sure that it's even clear that I could define what change that has brought for me, let alone others, but what I do know is that it's a change that happened. If you go to listen to somebody that really is learned and has a voice that can be heard, you can't help but come away with something that lets you grow a bit yourself, expands your own horizons. It opens your spirit. It makes you a better vessel, a conduit to act in a Christ-like, a Christian way. And I've been been really interested, maybe because it's simple and that's why they were told, but some of the parables, thinking about them, I got the parables on a superficial level, no doubt about it, reading through that. And then we come to the feast, and I guess Passover, and talk more extensively about Christ's seed within us, and of course the harvest and the fruit and the wine, and numbers that have meaning. References that are geographic but are really spiritual. And so, you know, what I'm meaning to share is that there's a, you know, there certainly is something to knowing the scriptures and to being versed in them and being able to quote from them and use them in a discussion. And I think we build on those, but this is, I guess, how I'm able to get up here and talk, not feeling terribly confident about it without that scriptural basis. But really, you know, anybody can. We all have Christ within us, and all we have to do is to allow for that and let that blossom and really bear fruit. And I'm real pleased to say that I think in our small group here, we've had a lot of nurturing people. We heard recently, we hear about, in reference to fivefold ministry, I'm going to gather there aren't going to be all that many apostles among us. But I could be wrong, but more than likely that's true. But in terms of teachers, in terms of people that can know and can share, without exception, everyone that's gotten up here to share something has given me something that I would have gotten nowhere else, and has been altering my own thoughts and my own small world. And so I think making me do something is good. I thank you for that. I think it makes one distill his or her own thoughts and emotions and put them in the context of the greater, the sort of bigger picture as opposed to our little look. So when I think about worrying about trees that are coming down and how am I going to pay for it, and I'm looking at the markets, and gee, I'm worth 40% less money than I used to be on paper. I thought I could be retired, but maybe I can't be retired. No, there's no, you know, hit yourself on the head and say, there's nothing important about any of that stuff. I mean, it is important to be clothed and to house and have food, but you just have to ask for it. If you believe, you know, those that believe and pray for it will receive it. That's an act of faith. You know, it really is. And you have to believe. And if you don't believe, I'm sure your prayers won't be answered. And if you do believe, they may be answered in a way that you don't expect, but they will be answered. They may be answered in a timeline that you don't want, but nevertheless it's right. And so when I look back on this last 4 years, what did I really provide for me to have someone, some accuser, make accusations that were unfounded and false, and ultimately about which I was vindicated? What did it do? It took me out of an environment that kept me preoccupied for 14 to 16 hours a day. It arrested me. It stopped me from doing those things I was doing that I never would have stopped myself. I just would have blithely kept going along, you know, done my thing till whatever age I decided I didn't have to do it anymore. Possibly wouldn't have gotten the call from our pastor. Wouldn't have been standing here. Wouldn't have been in Christ Life Fellowship for that wonderful teaching last week. Wouldn't have heard Andy sort of self-confessionally say, I don't really want to say this, I really don't want to do this, but I'm doing it, and I'm doing it out of faith. You know? Wouldn't hear Heather completely taken by the Spirit. You know? It's exciting. So if you want something exciting, you know, come to this church, or if not this church, go to some church, or if not that, go out on the street and talk to people. Tell them what you know. Tell them what you believe. Read the Bible. Read it as much as you can, and then try to act like, you know, there's some basic tenets. You know, love yourself. Love your neighbor. Act right. It's not complicated. It's not easy to do it, but it's not complicated to understand. And I think the good news is that as I get more aware of and comfortable with moving outside of this sort of little box that I had myself penned in by, it's bearing fruit. It's allowing me to begin to experience that. I'm unhappy that I'm getting to this later in my life than earlier, but basic notion is, I guess for whatever reason, that walk was not meant to be started as a much younger person. I think it's another little digression, when I think about teaching and I think about children being taught. I have a son, he's 26, and when he was 2, 3, and 4, I heard about things about what was happening mostly through his mother, because I wasn't around. And even at this time when we haven't been together for years, she'll say something like, do you remember when? His name's Blair. What Blair would have done this or that. And I think, no, I really don't remember that. It's not that I've forgotten, I just never had a stored memory. So now I've got, I'm a surrogate father for a 2.5-year-old that this woman is now raising. And I'm able to see just how infectious it is to have Christ within, because she loves to sing, she loves to read, and she actually goes to a church called the House of Prayer for All People, not nations, it's expensive. And she leads the choir at 2.5, and she knows a couple of songs, and she gets up with a mic, and I mean, it's really exciting. But she loves to read, so what are we reading? We decide, I kind of decide, we'll read some Bible stories. And she is excited as all get out about David and Goliath. And she loves that story. And I'm thinking, well, isn't it great that a 2-plus-year-old has a chance to experience that? And that richness is going to unfold in ways that will become much, much more profound. But isn't it good to get that started at such a young age? She loves Jonah. Now, God tells Jonah, go to Nineveh. And he says, oh, I'm not going, you know. As I understand, he kind of takes off. He goes to the wharf and gets on the boat. And he's hiding out in the bottom of the boat, and the storm comes. But eventually, he figures out the storm's kind of about him and what he's not doing. His hand's going to get forced. I learned during the last 4 years, God just doesn't let you alone. If he can't get your attention, okay, it's not right. But then he gives you another chance. Sort of like some of us, it's like the donkey. You've got to hit it, first before you figure out how to respond. But I'm thinking, here's this little girl, and she's learning about, with my help, and it's just even better. If you want to have some little prideful nature, you want to feel good about yourself, do something good for someone else, then you can feel good about yourself. But I'm thinking, isn't it good to see that when you don't do what God says, it's not that you're punished in a way, but it's not malignant, it's not malevolent, it's not some kind of heinous punishment. It's a punishment that has a reward attached to it. If you just pay attention and you just right the wrong, you're back at square one, and you're back to where you were. And that reminds me to think about the sort of salvation motif and the blood and the cleansing. If we're not convinced otherwise, we're all free to sin. The problem is, for most of us, we're not convinced. I'm not convinced of that. I can't think of anybody. Well, I can think of a lot of people who have sinned a lot, but I have my own crosses to bear. And it's been very, 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 very difficult to put that on hold. And even that conversation prior to coming tonight about stop the self-judgment, it's the same kind of notion. And I hear the anointings, and they're just, a lot of the focus is just to leave the carnality behind. Salvation is guaranteed. Just get with the program, just believe, and act accordingly, and that's something, you've got a lot of things to worry about, but you don't have to worry about that. You don't have to make animal offerings. You don't have to do the things that the Old Testament requires, thankfully. And cast out the line, like the fisherman, just be a fisher of man. And so I don't know that I have anything else to say. I'm just happy to be able to say it, because if I'm saying it, part of it is speaking it aloud. I know that from the Bible and from teaching. To say it out loud, confess it, and it'll be fine. So I don't know if there's anything else to add. I'm blessed by having a chance to talk with you. I hope that if it resonates with anybody in any way, shape, or form, it's helpful. And I thank you for listening. And thank you, Pastor, for the opportunity to say something. Amen.
Yeah,
give him a clap.